worst part was that they, well, they got into debt over all this litigation.
Oh, yes. What's that about? Talking of murders, I don't know if that's of any interest. I once had rather sensational murder inquiry, which I conducted in Kandy, police mansion Kandy. Got the usual report of a murder, you see, and went out to the spot with the superintendent of police, murder by shooting.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the spot. There was the deceased, all right, dead, shot dead. It was some family quarrel. But instead of the accused being already arrested in custody there with a couple of policemen on each side, the accused was still at large, walking about with a loaded gun in his hand. And he was sitting there. Now, if anybody comes near me, I shall first of all shoot Okuama, as well as Pinchiama, whom I've already killed, you see, and somebody else, and after that I shall kill myself. And if anybody comes near me, I shall shoot them too. Most truculent fellow. I reasoned with him, told him, no, he'd have a fair trial, and so on. If he'd only give himself up, put that gun down, and so on. No, he wouldn't have it. He's still walking about waiting for this gun. Police were closing in, hoping, you see, to get near enough to shoot him in the leg and bring him down, and then rush him. But before they could do that, suddenly, without any warning, he suddenly put the stem of the gun on the ground with the muzzle under his head here and pulled the trigger with his toe. And the bullet went right through his head. Killed himself. That's sensational. Police were upset, but I said, oh, that's the best way it could end. Instead of having a complicated murder inquiry and commission to the Supreme Court and everything, all I've got to do is to hold two inquests here.
Mm.
And the whole thing is finished.
Yes.
Quite sensational. That was in Kandy. Koenigsegg was a bad place for murders there, not a murder there.
Mm-hmm. Land disputes usually, or?
Big one?
Over what? Land disputes or?
Sometimes land disputes and more often family disputes.
Mm-hmm.
You see, particularly around the single Eid New Year, and people come home, man had been away, he comes back to the village and finds his wife living with another man, a quarrel, and often not a murder. The knife comes out.
When you were A.J.A. Kegol, for instance, did you find that when you were trying something new or branching out on some improvement, that the secretariat or even the provincial headquarters tended to quash you, tended to be obstructionist?
Well, they'd always raise a lot of queries, of course. I don't think I did start anything really sensational in that line in Kegol. You see, soon after I came to Kegol, the Depression came along.
Mm-hmm.
I went there in 1928, and 1929 was the beginning, and there was no question of starting any new schemes or anything that cost money.
Yes. I was just wondering whether, taken as a whole, in the sense of an ultimate idea, whether there was a lack of purpose and drive in English rule.
Oh, I don't know. I've come across that. Going much later, as far as getting things done are concerned, the short experience I have of it, I found that the new constitution which came in...
31?
No, not after that.
Oh.
The one that came in 1948.
Yeah?
It was much more satisfactory from the administrative point of view than the executive committee system of the Donemore Commission.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was...
But it only had to refer to one man, the minister, you see, and if he approved, he sanctioned it straight away. He didn't have to go before the committee and be argued there.
Yes, I was coming to the Donemore.
Oh, well,
That's a very interesting one, of course. And I was wondering whether pre-Donemore there was a tendency sometimes there's a lack of policy in certain things, and was there a tendency to run along on certain lines and to seek efficiency as an end in itself, rather than...
Yes, I think very likely there was, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the official view.
What sort of men was, what sort of men were Thompson and Clifford and Stanley, the governors.
Oh, well, I was a bit too junior then to...
Yeah, I appreciate that. You wouldn't have been in
the order in which they came, really. Stanley, he came round and on circuit and came across him more than the others. He came out of Cagle when I was AGA there. Those are things.
He doesn't seem to strike me as a person who had much drive.
Who, Stanley?
Mm-hmm.
No, perhaps not. I thought his report was quite good. I seem to remember that.
On the Constitution?
On the Constitution. He analysed things pretty thoroughly. He reported on the Donoghue thing, didn't he?
No, just before the Donoghue, on the earlier one. Actually, there's a conflict between the views of Clifford and Stanley. Clifford said it was utterly unworkable.
Mm.
And Stanley said that in practice it was a qualified success.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And I was wondering, because you wouldn't have had much experience of it. Of
the committee system?
No, not the Donoghue thing. Donoghue. He was referring to the earlier system.
Oh, before that?
Legislative Council.
Oh, no, no. No, I came into contact with the Donoghue thing, of course, because I was acting for a time as excise commissioner and again as controller of labour for a time. Used to attend the executive committee meetings then whenever there was something new in my department.
Yes. In the 1920s, just before the Donoghue Commission came out, there was Gandhi's movement in India and some acts of terrorism and a mass movement. Did you consider it that it had implications for Ceylon?
No, I think our general view there was, well, it won't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Gandhi came to Ceylon, of course.
Yes.
Paid one visit there. I didn't see him, but I met Nehru, he came over.
Did you find in the 1920s, and even in the 1930s, that politicians levelled any attacks at you in council? You know, they tended to do that.
Sometimes, yes. No, not with me personally, no.
Oh.
No, I was always in quite good terms with my local council members.
Yes. Did you feel that any other civil servants resented this thing, these attacks?
Yes, some of them may have. Couldn't give instances, really.
Mm-hmm. What about this? Just to clear up matters before the Donoghue Commission, can you remember Gunasinghe, A.E. Gunasinghe?
Yes, I remember him, yes.
In the 1920s?
Oh, I never heard him then.
Oh, I see.
Him for much later when I was G.A. Colombo.
Uh-huh. Now, he was a bit unpopular, you know, among civil servants in the 1920s.
Yes, yes. No, I never came across him then.
What about the Ceylonization question? Was there was it in question in the 1920s?
Well, the process had started, of course, and was gradually extending. I think I served as one of the first men to become a Ceylonese government agent.
Oh, who was that?
C.O. Wickham was here.
Oh, yes, of course.
When I was AGA Cagle, he was appointed as government agent for Atapura.
Mm-hmm.
And he visited Cagle on circuit.
Very interesting. He would have been the first man, yes.
He was actually the first, I think.
You see, this question did arise rather early in the 20s. And before that, certainly, and even early in the 1920s, before the first GA was appointed, there was a feeling among the civil servants that while they might be promoted in the judicial line and other lines, that they would never be made made GAs.
Oh yes, there was that feeling, I know.
Uh-huh. And was that a concrete policy on part of government, or was it accident?
Well, I don't know what the policy of government was.
But there was this
feeling. That was the feeling, certainly.
I have read a very interesting memo by Bose, just before he left, 1923. He argues against the higher employment of Ceylonese.
Really?
And he said they wouldn't be cool-headed in a crisis.
Well, Teddy Bear was a bit of a die-hard, I think.
Of course, his principal argument was that the people will never trust the impartiality and integrity of one of their own number.
Yes, well...
Well, would you comment
on that? A point of view, of course. Mm-hmm. I never subscribed to it.
But for one thing, most of the civil servants were so much more educated and so much more assured than the peasantry that they would command a...
Oh, yes, exactly. Most of the Sealanese members of the service hadn't had the same advantages. Of course, there was the local division.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think, well, naturally enough, the first Sealanese to be given higher administrative posts had started as local division members of the civil service.
Mm-hmm. And what was your personal reaction to the Donamo Constitution?
Well, it was going to be pretty complicated and a lot of difficult work.
What did you think of the grant of universal franchise?
Oh, well, I thought on the whole that'd be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
My experience as a registering officer, it's amazing how well it did work.
What do you mean by how well?
Well, I mean that the people understood what they had to do and did vote. And that was still more noticeable, I think, when the bigger step forward was made in the 1947 general election.
Mm-hmm.
I was returning officer then in Gaul for six members.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was present at the counting, and the number of spoiled ballot papers was extraordinarily small,
mm-hmm.
a very small percentage. I think even smaller than you very often get at a parliamentary election in this country. I was amazed that there were so few spoiled that the people understood exactly what they had to do. All these crosses, these papers they marked with a cross, you see. Of course, you had the symbols,
mm-hmm.
the elephant and the house and the motor car and the bus and all the rest of it. If they couldn't read, they could do that. And I thought it worked extremely well.
I was wondering whether you were, well, on the whole, exceptional in viewing this universal franchise with favour. Would you say that many of the other officials thought it was premature and were against it?
Quite possibly. I thought it was a good thing.
Did you feel, in the course of the next decade, did you feel that this grant of universal franchise had made government more responsive to...
Oh, what? I think so. I think it had that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely.
More social legislation.
Oh, yes.
Mm. What about the... Yes?
Well, I was going to say, I didn't much like from the executive point of view, the administrative executive committee.
Yes, I was going to ask.
No, I thought that was was troublesome. It was awfully difficult to get a clear decision. I mean, you couldn't get the minister's decision. You had to go to the executive committee and the thing had to be debated there.
Why? I mean, if the minister was...
It depended on the minister.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Some ministers could give a decision.
Yes, Senator Harker, he got his way all right, of course.
So, in effect, some ministers could go to the committee with a fait accompli.
More or less. It did depend on the minister.
As what did you have direct experience of these committees?
Well, attending their meetings when I was acting as excise commissioner, which I did for about 6 or 8 months.
In 32,
I think it was.
Oh, just before Martley or after?
Before.
Before,
right.
I see. Oh, yes, who was your minister then?
Diatelica.
Oh, well. How was he?
Minister of Home Affairs, you see, he came under that executive committee.
Did he have control of his committee?
Yes, to some extent. But not to the extent that D.S. Erenaka did.
Mm-hmm.
I always got on very well with him.
Was he somewhat weak in ways?
He gave me that impression, yes. He hadn't the same forceful personality.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of, in the committee, so was there a lot of squabbling?
There was a good deal of argument then.
Mm. And did you feel that they were wasting time discussing trifling matters?
Well, of course, I only attended there when excise matters were on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
pay for the other items. They were mostly not very important matters of that policy.
And taking this executive committee system as a whole, were there any other defects?
Well, principally, I sense the
slowness.
The slowness in getting a decision. Such long delay in getting approval.
Did you, for instance, feel that they were that they worked at cross purposes, the different committees?
I think in some committees that probably could be said. You can have different
viewpoints.
And unless you had a strong minister, it was very difficult to get a final decision.
And what about the ministries? Did they work against each other and without liaison?
Well, I don't know about that. I never got any instances.
Would you say that, on the other hand, it had the value of giving individual legislative councillors some administrative experience?
Oh, yes, I think it was valuable then. It gave them an insight into workings of the department. Yes, which they probably wouldn't have acquired otherwise. Yes, it was useful in that respect.
The officers of state, and the ministers had some friction, didn't they, in the early years?
Yes. Principally, I think, with regard to public service. You see, the control of the public service was vested in the chief secretary, exclusively. And the executive committees like to have a say in the appointment of individuals to individual posts. And sometimes press the claims of the candidates of whom Chief Secretary might not approve.
Did you feel that the Commission were unwise in giving this power of interference to these committees?
Well, it gave them experience, of course, of the workings of the government departments. It was a novel experiment. I think they copied it from the Democratic Council. It would work quite well. Anyway, the later commission, the Soviet commission, decided to scrap it, didn't they? They thought it wasn't it a good thing after all.
Regarding the relations between the officers and state and the leading politicians, the ministers really, did you feel that the ministers were sometimes pushing things too far and asking for the impossible?
Came across well, with regard, as I say, to appointments. I don't know about the legal or the financial matters of the legal secretary and the financial secretary. With regard to appointments, they very often try to interfere, as I said.
Yes, when you were in the provinces, for instance, did you find some politicians going above your head to the colonial secretary?
No, I didn't have that experience.
In an earlier period, wasn't Murkiston Fletcher rather unpopular because he allowed this sort of thing?
Yeah, I have heard rumours to that effect, but I never came across.
You never came across. And okay, well, this change, I think, called for a lot of adaptation from the part of the former colonial secretaries, now called chief secretaries.
Yeah.
What sort of man was Tyrrell?
Well, perhaps I shouldn't say it personally. I thought Tyrrell was a bit too much inclined to have favourites amongst the public service. His own favourites, you see.
And
was inclined to push them. That was the impression I got. I've heard other people say the same thing in the public service. We may have been wrong, but that was the impression we got.
I was wondering whether he was a type of man who tended to stand on his dignity, because...
Oh, yes, I think he did do that too. Oh, yes.
Because if he was so, it would have been rather difficult to get on with the ministers. You see what I mean?
Yes, yes. Yes, I think he was rather rather inclined that way. Much more so than Wedderburn. Wedderburn was much more accessible.
Courteous man.
Oh, yes. Mm. Definitely.
But was he also rather old school? I mean, he was what you could call rather of the old guard.
Oh, I think so. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I mean, I don't know whether he would have found it easy to to adapt himself to these changes.
I think he probably found it quite difficult.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Bourdillon. Is it Bourdillon?
Bourdillon was...
For a short time.
Short time, for 2 seconds.
Was he also like Tyrrell? I mean, inclined to stand on his dignity?
I really don't know. I never really knew Bourdillon much. Of course, I knew Tyrrell more because he was a member of the civil service.
Stubbs?
Whatever had much to do with Stubbs. When he came back as governor, of course, I met him officially once or twice.
Of course, Chalmers had a pretty severe comment, I think.
Yes, he was pretty serious. Because he came without colonial experience.
Yeah, did you feel that he was very much a secretariat dweller?
Well, I can't say I've been a cadet in his time, you see. He visited Jaffa officially when I was still a cadet, and that's about the only time I came across him.
What was the civil servant's attitude to these the refusal of the State Council to pass travelling allowances for them, passage allowances?
Well, of course, we thought they were wrong.
No, I mean, was it
resented? It went on year after year. The governor always had to certify.
Was it resented, or was it taken as a bit of a joke, symbolic?
Well, I don't know. It was resented, but we felt fairly safe. Because I think having been certified once, we knew it would be certified again.
Yes, I see what you mean.
They're all right there.
Can you remember this? Also, another aspect of this nationalism was this Surya Mal movement.
Oh, yes, the flower, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which they used to sell on Poppy Day. There used to be some conflict then. Yes.
Did you take this seriously, or even bother to note it?
Well, I had to note it once in those police measures at Colombo.
Oh, that's when Hennessy hit someone.
Exactly. He lost his temper or something and went to the salty by these people he was prosecuted. He was quite wrong, of course.
Signed
a picture of these.
Hennessy sounds Irish.
I suppose he may have been.
Well, it was very strange coming from Irish.
He was an extraordinary person, certainly, very eccentric in many ways.
And who was the person he hit?
Well, the story in Mal Sellers, uh-huh. The streets of Colombo, you see.
Oh yes, and there's another, well, this was the issue in which Wedderburn and Stubbs came up against the ministers, this brace girdle affair.
Oh yes, I vaguely remember that.
He was an Australian planter who was stirring up the labour on the estate. I don't know how seriously, I never discovered that.
Was there a shooting incident in Colombo, or was that somebody else?
That was later, a Muloya estate.
Oh, no, I don't mean that case. No, somebody loose off a gun, I vaguely remember, Mount Virginia, and it's a Japanese. Anyway, memory's getting mixed up. No, I remember the base girdle affair.
Yes,
he was... My name, but what it was all about.
He was, they sent passed an order for deportation, and, but yes. He got away, and they couldn't find him. Mm. And then the controversy was really constitutional, because the question was, it was a question for Sir D.B. Jadhavkar, you see.
Mm.
And, I'm convinced that Jadhavkar lied on this occasion, because they went to him just before he went to England, and he said, I don't want to handle this thing. Treat it as a matter of external affairs, which it was not. But, and they deported him, you see.
Yeah.
But, the politicians of, I mean, other ministers, cable judge, again, asked him whether they knew anything about the deportation, whether he knew anything about the deportation order. He said, I know nothing.
He knew nothing about it. He couldn't put it all on Banks, Inspector and the police.
And Ferguson, yes.
Yes.
And the commission decided that he was lying, but that the order, per se, was ultra-virus.
Yes, I vaguely remember the thing. I never inquired into it.
What was your impression? Did you feel that he had merited deportation?
I don't remember the facts of the case. I wasn't in Colombo at the time. I guess I was. I do know anything about it.
Oh, yes. I noticed that you were the deputy controller of labor for a while.
Yes, sir.
2 years?
Oh, no, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I acted as controller of labor in 1935. Mr. Hobday went on leave. And then, about 9 months, I suppose. And then he came back from leave and resumed duties as controller of labor. And then I was going on leave myself the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, well, I don't want to have a new job now. And I stay on as deputy controller of labor until I go on leave. That was the only time. I hadn't much work to do, either.
As deputy controller?
As deputy controller.
What was your job, really?
Well, it's as a deputy to the controller. The controller of labor's job is primarily controller of Indian immigrant laborers.
Mm-hmm.
That was dealing with the Indian laborers coming over from Ceylon, looking out from India, and the various immigration organizations they had in India, which in Napoli was the principal one.
Did you recruit labor yourself, or
no.
Supervise
it? It was done by the immigration commissioner who lived in India. Headquarters at Trichinopoly, had a deputy under them.
Well, did you think that it was run efficiently?
Oh, yes, very efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Because
assuming that Indian labourers had to be brought in, you see, I think they did very well. I went over and inspected them when I was controlled of labour.
Colonel Wright, who's the boss source, criticises the government's handling of this as compared to the Planters Commission pre-1920 or so.
Oh, well, I don't know. We've been working very well. Another thing cropped up when I was controller of labour, and that was the introduction of employer's liability for accidents, you know, down in the course of employment.
Whose suggestion was that?
Oh, I don't know who started it, but the thing was just coming up, and as controller of labour, I had quite a lot of work to do in working out the rules, you see, under which they were to work.
This should have been under Correa, was it? Minister?
I think Correa must have been minister at the time.
How did you find that he was, find him as a minister?
Oh, I got on quite well with him. Oh, yes, he was quite...
What were his relations with the executive committee?
Seemed to get on quite well with them.
Could he get around them, like...
I don't think he had the same control on them that some ministers had.
Mm-hmm.
But I got on very well with Correa.
What about this question of... immigrants' debts. Did you feel that many were indebted?
They were all indebted when they came over to the estates.
Couldn't you do anything about this?
No, I don't think the company did anything about it. But as far as I remember, eventually they were all wiped out, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. I thought that was before your time.
It may have been. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the thing cropping up when I was in the control of Labour's office. Not the debt question.
There were no trade unions on the estates.
Not in that time. I don't remember. They may have been incipient ones, but one didn't hear about them.
Was it your policy to encourage the growth of trade unions? I mean, did you feel it was necessary for them?
The thing didn't arise. I didn't think about it back then.
And how did government get on with the planters in your time? I mean, how did the control of labour get on?
Oh, the relations were quite good.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go up to Kandy for the quarterly meetings with the Planters Association, which were held in Kandy in those days. A few questions used to crop up and which they answered questions. Not very many.
Would you say that they were a powerful pressure group? Well, you know, in the...
Oh, I think they were. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, and what was this Indus Ceylon problem? Had it really cropped up in your time? With the Indian dealings with the Indian government on this?
No, not really. But I do remember when Nehru came over to Ceylon,
mm-hmm.
I went to a meeting, I think. It was given by Jad Tilaka for a garden party, and he addressed us afterwards. And then he urged us not to forget the how much we owe to the Indian labourers in our midst, you see, and to look after them properly. And he emphasised that point.
But
they were looked after quite well then.
On the estates?
Yeah.
What about Did you have to do any inspections of estates and their sanitary conditions?
No, nothing of that.
Was there any officer doing that sort of thing?
We had inspectors
mm-hmm.
who used to go around and see if the law was complied with.
How well did the immigrant know this labour law, which was he was supposed to know at least?
Well, I suppose the average labourer didn't do it. Much about it, they said, the Indian people, the
mm-hmm.
Indian labourers that came along.
You didn't have to go into the question of the sufficiency of the labour law. Was it sufficient?
The wages, you mean?
Well, wages and...
I forget whether the minimum mm-hmm. wage had been introduced at that time. I don't think it had, I'm not mm-hmm. quite sure.
No, and also the question...
They had to buy them with rice, of course, and that popped up.
The question of contracts and giving up notice and their liability, even liability to punishment, their liability to protection if they were ill-treated by the planters.
Occasionally complaints mm-hmm. to be received which were inquired into by the department.
The department did go into complaints.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. yes, complaints were made. But I well remember the magistrate, when I first went to the magistrate in Martley, the penal laws were enforced, you know. It was a penal offence for a labourer to neglect his work. All kinds of things he could be punished for deserting the estate. It's a criminal matter. He's liable to 6 months in prison.
Do you feel that this was too strong?
It was monstrous, really.
But... on the other hand, you could hardly expect him to pay a fine because he wouldn't have the money.
Well, I mean, it's not a matter at all. a breach of a civil contract, not a matter of criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
I was criticised by the planters and magistrates for imposing very much lighter sentences than my predecessors had for all the breaches of penal law.
Yes,
and actually, while I was magistrate in Martley, to my delight, they were completely abolished. The whole thing was abolished.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the fairness of these laws, while the labourer was liable to penal punishment, wasn't the planter also liable to penal punishment? I mean, at least both parties were on equal footing, or were they?
Oh, not for criminal law. I don't think so. I mean, unless he committed an offence against the criminal law, which would be an offence for anybody. Nothing definite with regard to his labourers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There was one clause against what they called crimping, I think, if mm-hmm. one employer seduced a labourer from...
Oh, well, that was in their own interest, you see.
That was a criminal matter, I think. But such cases were generally brought against the Kanganis.
No, but what if they failed to pay the wages? Was that treated as a civil or criminal matter?
Oh, but there was no minimum wage in those days.
No, if they failed to pay any wages completely.
I don't know, that would be a criminal matter at all.
I don't suppose that would have risen, really.
It would have risen back for
Jumping back to the Donoghue thing, did you have any experience of the elections itself under the Donoghue constitution?
Oh yes, I was returning after in Kegol.
Okay, go on.
Yes.
And were there any... What did you feel the response... This was the first election.
Yes.
Did the people seem to know what they were doing?
Oh yes, I think so. It passed off quite well. Of course, I know allegations were made about impersonation. I guess there was a certain amount of impersonation, but...
Enough to sway matters?
I doubt it. I doubt it.
What were the factors that counted in choosing candidates? I mean...
Oh, there, in the candidate district, generally, I would say the birth of the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Pardon? The birth?
The birth. I mean, his background.
But if both were roughly equal?
Oh, then I suppose the personalities would come in.
I was wondering whether bus companies had any influence.
The bus companies? No. No, I don't think so. Not at that time, not 1931.
They didn't need their buses to transport people.
I don't remember such things cropping up.
Question
but the question of caste came into it, you know, to some extent, particularly in the Kegol district. There was a Goigama candidate, and there was a, who was the other man, I've forgotten, Buskama or something, one of the other castes, you see, and the Goigama man won. But the two of them were returned unopposed, owing to their being one of the old Kandian families.
Who were these?
Me, Denia Edgar, down in Roanwilla, and Molymory.
What sort of man was Molymory?
I got on very well with him. He had been a member of the Legislative Council before for Kegol. I found him quite reasonable and sensible.
He didn't interfere in your work?
No.
What about N.M., of course they came up later in that district, N.M. Pereira and...
Well, I knew N.M. Pereira in Colombo.
Oh, I see.
Not in Roanwilla. Mm-hmm. And at the later election he came forward there. I forget whether he's Queen Midenia Edgar. Midenia died. I don't know what to say. After I'd left Kegol. But I was relieved because there were two uncontested elections.
Yes. Did you feel that this local fixer, the caste question, and local, what I would call fixers, men of local influence, had a great influence on elections?
Oh, yes, they did. Certainly in the Kandian district.
Did you feel that these factors, rather than the constitution of, I mean, the nature of the constitution, prevented the growth of parties? The influence of so many local factors.
Those were the things I think that chiefly influenced the voters in the Kandian districts at that time, quite definitely.
What about this allegation that the colours had an influence? Colours given to the candidates.
Oh, I see, you mean the red and the green and so on? Oh, I don't think so.
Some said that certain colours were more popular.
I don't know, I've never had any difficulty in allotting the colours to the candidates. I forget how we did allot the colours actually.
I must have taken a pin then.
I forget.
Oh, yes, sir. LSSP, did you note the rise of this Marxist Party in the late 1930s?
I read about it in the newspaper, but that was not all.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Didn't come across them. Except, of course, when I was G.A. Colombo. When was that? 1939, 1940, just at the outbreak of war. I then, for the first time, met, what's that man, then? Gunnar Wardner. Philip Gunnar Wardner.
Oh, yes, what did you think of him?
He was rather a flamboyant personality. I didn't have any quarrel with him particularly.
And did you know SWRD, Bandaranaike?
Oh, yes, very well. Yes, when he was a minister, you see, very often came round on circuit to inspecting things.
Was he? Meeting. Did you feel that he had, he interfered a lot?
I don't know. I haven't come across any instances of that, really. No, not Bandaranaike.
Someone said that he felt that he had a chip on his shoulder and he was rather anti-European, unlike many of the others. You didn't feel
that? I didn't feel that, no. I always got on very well with him.
What about the communal issue? Wasn't he pressing that a bit at that time?
I don't know. I never met Mrs. Bandaranaike. She was a bad lobby, wasn't she? She was a candidate.
That's what they
used.
It might interest you to hear this view of the LSSP party. A small local party run by young men with more money than brains. Close quotation. And again, they are generally regarded as half-wits and degenerates.
Really? No. Well, that, really.
That was Tubbs.
Really?
Yes, right into the Secretary of State. I think it was over the Bracegirdle affair. But I don't like his wording, generally regarded, which implies that the whole civil service thought so.
Oh, I doubt it.
Yes, I have certainly not.
A few civil servants actually came in contact with him, I think. Maybe that's the son of the Majesty.
Yes, that's right. Yes. How about these Gansabaga courts? Did you know much about their working?
Well, in the early days, Governor Davis was supposed to there was an appeal jurisdiction, that's right. The appeal lay from the Gansabaga decision to the Governor Davis. There may have been cases where I upset the President's decision, but very, very rarely does they affirmed it. They were a nuisance when they were recorded in the local language, Singhalese or Tamil, because at one stage cadets had to translate against the Barber case in the examination.
Oh, I see.
Well, even ordinary Singhalese or Tamil writing may not be very easy to translate, but when it's the record of a court of law, and they're writing down things as fast as can go, it's extremely difficult to decipher. Those were the early stages. Later on, the presidents recorded the proceedings in English. When they came up in appeal to the government agents, it was only an English script that you had to deal with.
Mm-hmm. What about the Gansabawas themselves? Did you find them useful as administrative bodies?
As opposed to the courts.
No, in the administrative line, in handling local, small local matters.
It had little to do with them, I don't remember. Coming across them much. Only this question of the appeals from the president.
What about this? Did you ever come across these Velvidanis?
Oh yes, it was Velvidanis, particularly in the Anwar Authority.